The Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It's Saturday early. It's O-Dark 30 out here on the island of Oahu. The sun is not yet up by quite a wide margin here as we get into the winter months here. And I know it's hard to think of winter and summer here in Hawaii, but, the sun goes through its pattern in the sky as it does for anybody else. And it's not quite as striking as you'll find in the northern latitudes, of course, but there's a noticeable shortening of the days here, even this close to the equator. But as we watch out the window, the sun will be coming up during the course of our show here. I know over there on the mainland, the sun is up and it's Saturday and we're into our end of the week wrap up here. We seem to have a handle on our computer issues out here. The chat room is open. The webcam is running. Phone lines are open. Matt is in the control room ready to answer your phone calls to 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933. And I hope you're going to call in today. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about looking back over this last week. First of all, for those of you who follow such things, there's been another major, major quake off to the southwest of the Pacific, a 7.0, no tsunami warning has been issued yet. We actually, two nights ago, had a fairly moderate quake down on the Big Island on a seamount called Lo'ihi. And what that is, the hot spot that forms the Hawaiian Islands, which is the Big Island, the new island, and stretches all the way out to the northwest, all the way to Midway. It's a long continuing chain of islands. The newest island being formed is called Lo'ihi. It's not quite through the surface of the ocean yet. It's sort of erupting and building up from the bottom of the ocean. We still got about 5,000 real estate agents with their signs standing along the south shore of the Big Island waiting for it to pop through, but that's not actually going to happen for a while. But they had a quake down there about 4.5, and they watch these things because these brand new seamounts, they can have large undersea displacements and can cause quite a bit of local tsunami, local wave damage. All right. Turning to the important news, we're just now getting word that Barack Obama has declared the swine flu a national emergency. He signed a declaration or a proclamation that allows medical officials to bypass federal requirements in the production, distribution, and sticking in your arm of these various vaccines. And they're saying, well, this is kind of similar to a declaration we would do of a hurricane making landfall. Now, I'm a little fuzzy on this, but I seem to recall that we didn't get a declaration like that before Katrina hit. We had to wait for a couple of days afterwards before somebody says, oh, I guess we had to do a declaration. So here we are, Barack Obama's out there please saying it's a national emergency and it's this, and they're saying, you know, we have had 1,000 U.S. deaths so far, and 100 children have died from the flu. And don't get me wrong, these deaths are a tragedy for the families and friends that know these people. And it's a horrible thing to have happen. But the normal flu, I found a site on, a source on this thing. The normal, regular, seasonal flu kills 63,000 people a year in the United States of America. We're a population of 300 million. There's a lot of people. 1,000 U.S. deaths, it's a tragedy in a small scale, but against the entire population, it is a tiny, tiny percentage of the population. And 100 children, that too is a tragedy. But we're losing more children to car accidents. We're losing more children to starvation and other situations than we are to the swine flu. And yet this is the big bugaboo, and they're declaring national emergency and so forth and so on. And the problem is, we are already getting word from other countries of deaths linked to this swine flu vaccine. Now, the official U.S. policy is, it's all a coincidence and you can't sue the vaccine makers, so shut up and roll up your sleeve. That seems to be the attitude so far. But we're hearing more and more from these other countries. We are getting, again, more confirmations that there are, you know, there's all these different vaccines. There's the pure vaccine that government and military people are getting, and then there's the stuff that's going out to the general population that has all these adjuvants. Squalene is known to be in there. That's got some problems with it. Some of them have thimerosal in there, which has been linked anecdotally to autism. Again, the U.S. government officially denies it. But at this point, I don't think any of us are willing to bet our lives and health, especially that of our children, on anything the U.S. government is going to say. It's not like they have a tremendous amount of credibility right now about anything. So, you know, I'm very concerned because all of a sudden, you know, they've been fast-tracking the vaccines. The vaccines are coming from companies with a prior history of really horrible mistakes, of letting out test vaccines that had full potency live virus in there that potentially could kill people. We know there was one vaccine tested in Poland, nobody will say who it's from, that actually killed about 20 homeless people that it was tested on. So, you know, this idea. Now, so what is going on? I know a lot of people are saying, oh, it's a massive depopulation program. And yes, the planet's a little crowded. And yes, I'll be the first to admit we have a population problem because sex is a lot more fun than dying. And a lot of people are trying to figure out, well, are they trying to kill people with these shots? Or are they going to give the people they want to keep alive the shots and then release something into the atmosphere? And so they're kind of banging their heads back and forth about that. My opinion here is that this has a lot more to do with money and politics than anything else. As I've been saying all along, we know there is a push for a global government. We've got a bunch of these starry-eyed idealists running around saying the world would be so much better with a single, unified government with, of course, us in charge. And, they're trying to figure out some way they can con the people of the world into saying, okay, we don't want to be our own little nations and take care of ourselves anymore. We will bow down and abase ourselves before some government 12,000 miles away on the other side of the planet that we will bow down to. And there appear to have been three foundations to bring on the global government. The first was global warming. They're getting ready to sign this huge treaty in Copenhagen in December, which will cede control over U.S. internal economic, and industrial process to a global environmental authority to deal with the problem of global warming. Except, of course, we know there is no global warming. We're in a cooling trend right now. Winter is coming early. In fact, I just had a report the other day. Apparently, they're setting record cold temperatures in Bavaria right now, which is a very, very lovely part of the world. If you ever get a chance to go out there and tour some of those palaces of the Mad King of Bavaria, Ludwig III. If you've ever been to Disneyland, Ludwig's Neuschwanstein is the reality that Disneyland was copied from. Walt's copy is a pale, thin comparison to the real deal. It's just amazing. But I digress. So we have record cold in Bavaria. We are seeing snow coming early all across the United States. I got an email from some of my family in New England. Normally, they never see snow before Thanksgiving. Now they've got it before Halloween. And they're still pushing global warming. We're going to call it climate change now. Like climate change is a bad thing. Climate change is what the climate does all the time. There's never been a period in the 4.5 billion year history of planet Earth where the climate wasn't changing. That's the way it's supposed to work. There is no balance of nature. There is no steady state of nature. It's all very romantic and poetic, but it's not reality. Nature is chaos. Nature is constant change. Nature is new life forms coming into existence and old life forms going extinct. Nature is shorelines moving. Nature is mountains being lifted up and ocean floors being subducted down. That is nature. It never stays the same. And this idea that all of a sudden, if you vote for us and give us your obedience and your money, we will lock planet Earth exactly as it is right now. I mean, if they could really do that, they'd call off all of these earthquakes that are killing people all over the planet right now. They also had another big one a couple of days ago in Afghanistan, above 6.0. And they can't do that. And, of course, the fact that they were saying, you know, only 5-10 years ago with Al Gore and his movie, we're going to die in all this heat and now we're cooling, proves these bozos don't know what they're talking about. They've got enough money to bribe enough scientists to push an agenda, and they were 180 degrees wrong. At our most generous, they screwed up. At our least generous, it was a con right from the start, and it's one of three to sell you a global government. When we come back, I'm going to talk about the other two, and one of them, I think, is this swine flu hysteria that they're trying to throw on you. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors, 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933, and we will be right back.
K Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means...
Which means they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone. The panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. And first of all, I have to apologize. The coffee has not kicked in. I've been giving you the wrong number. I've been giving you the phone number for our weekday show. And I get zoned into that groove there. And I keep forgetting. On Saturday, I'm in a different studio. And it's a different phone line. And the people in the other studio are saying, you're giving out the wrong number. So if you want to call us and join us on the show today, it's 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231, and I will drink more coffee so that I don't make these mistakes in the show. And the sun is starting to come up back there. Now, we're talking about the reason, possible reason, for Barack Obama's declaration of a national emergency to deal with the swine flu. And remember, these national emergencies always carry with them exceptional authority for the president he otherwise does not have. It's not just a public relations statement for the paper. These national emergencies will give the president powers he normally does not have under the Constitution. This is one of the reasons why every president who comes into office will continue and extend states of emergency created by the predecessors, because they don't want to give away those powers. We have got states of emergency in the United States that have been here going back to the 1930s and Franklin Roosevelt, when he declared national emergencies to deal with economic this and war that and so forth and so on. And each president comes in and says, I might need those powers and authority, so I'm going to issue a proclamation that this declaration is being extended, the state of emergencies being extended, and I will keep all of those powers. And it's one of the reasons that over time, the president has become a position of tremendous power, not intended by the Constitution and by the Founding Fathers. So Obama has declared a new state of emergency relative to the swine flu, and I think the reason he's done that, first of all, I think he needs a little bit of political cover, because if Iran comes back this next week with some kind of agreement on this uranium enrichment deal, then the reason for invading Iran is gone, and the U.S. is kind of stuck with this economy that's crashing because of U.S. government policy. And two wars that we are not winning, that the people of the world know were started with lies and deceptions and fraud. And the government is in serious, serious trouble. They're losing the faith and trust of the American people. There's a lot of resentment building against the bankers. There's a lot of talk about tax revolution, people just simply refusing to pay anymore because the money isn't being spent for the benefit of the American people. It's going to the bankers, it's going to Israel, it's going to war. All of this constitutes onerous debt. We, the people, are not liable for government debts not spent for our direct benefit, like roads and schools and hospitals. We're not. That's a known principle of international law. So I think they're throwing up this big, scary swine flu monster to sort of keep everybody's attention, because the proposed war in Iran isn't going very well. They may have to do another false flag attack. And if they're going to do that, they don't want you watching too closely as that maneuver is going on. But getting back to this push toward global government, global warming. Oh, here we go. See, now that I put out the right phone number, we're getting calls. Phil in Canada, aloha, Phil. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I'm watching you on the webcam. Listen, about this global warming and climate change.
Mm-hmm.
One of my holidays I took in Italy, and if you want to visit the old, Rome is built inland, and the original Roman port was called Ostia.
Yes.
And you can still visit the ruins in Ostia.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the Roman port. So you go visit now it's called Ostia Antica, and you get there. Of course, there's no sea or ocean, because that's now 32 kilometers away.
Yes.
Right? So, I mean,
yes.
It's obvious that things have changed over 2,000 years.
Yes.
But the water has retreated 32 kilometers.
Yes.
Now, so maybe it can come back 32 kilometers. I mean, after 2,000 years, is it allowed to do that? I mean, who's to dictate what the global change or climate change is?
It happens all the time. One of the interesting things, when there was a little bit of warming about a decade ago, and there was a little bit of melting in Iceland, what they discovered were the ruins of ancient human societies that had been living there, which basically and there was indications of not only agriculture, but churches and religious institutions. There had been people living there at a time when it was a lot warmer than it is now. And we know from geology and paleontology the Earth has been a lot warmer than it is now and a lot colder. And it happens in these 100,000-year cycles as the Earth's orbit alternates between being more circular and more elongated as it travels around the sun. And this, too, is something way beyond our technology to deal with. So this idea that they're going to change the Earth's climate and lock it into this one temperature, again, it really is absurd. But as you correctly point out, coastlines change all the time. It's not even always from ocean levels rising and falling. In the case of Italy and the Mediterranean, it has to do with the fact that it's a geologically very dynamic area, and some parts of the Mediterranean basin are rising and some are falling. I mean, if you look at all the salt mines around there, that tells you that a long time ago it was all underwater. Now it's all above water. And so, that change, that's the essence of nature.
Well, here in Montreal, we had a little bit of snow 2 days ago, and that's quite early for us too.
Mm-hmm.
And now today it's gotten a little warmer, but I mean, it's just these things change. I mean, I've been here I saw it about 10 years ago, snow in June, just about 60 kilometers from here. So you can't start predicting what the weather is going to be. What I'd like to know is, because I heard or read someplace that the temperature on Mars has been going up and down.
So, yes.
I mean, if you can kind of get a pattern of what's happening there, you can't blame human events to what's happening on Mars.
It's that gosh darn Viking landers. They had those radioisotope generators, and they're just putting out all this. And it is interesting because we have instrumented the solar system to a high extent, and the Martian temperature was going up at the same time it looked like the Earth's temperature was going up, and both Mars and the Earth have gone into a decline at the same time. We know that total energy of the sun is influenced. But it fluctuates, and right now we have a sun that is almost completely devoid of sunspots, which means it's putting out less total energy that reaches the Earth and affects our climate. There are all kinds of factors, the density of cosmic rays, which can trigger cloud formation. Clouds reflect light back into space and cool the Earth. It's such a complex issue, and given that we can't accurately forecast the weather 3-4 days in advance, this idea that we're going to predict a 0.4 degree increase in temperature over the next 40 years, it is utterly absurd. I was actually joking with my wife. We just had a near miss with a hurricane here in Hawaii, Hurricane Neki, and it started off out to the south east, and it passed the islands by to the south, and then it turned north. Then it curved back around, heading east again over the north. Now it's a tropical depression. And every day there would be this 5-day storm track put out by NOAA, and the next day, it'd be completely different. And so it looked really impressive. Ooh, we're predicting 5 days out. More than one day, that diagram was utterly, utterly useless. Phil, thanks a lot for the phone call. We got to take a break for commercials, and we'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
I'm a Max. jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And I'm reading in the chat room over the break, and they're talking about, well, you know, they're still slashing and burning the Amazon rainforest, and I'm against that. And I want to be very clear about something, because I'm getting a lot of emails from people saying, oh, you're one of those rape the earth type people. And it's, no, I like nature. I'm just part of it. And the reality is that every life form alters the environment around it. They take nutrients in from other sources, usually another life form, and their exhalations, excretions go back out and alter the environment around them. Beavers build dams for beavers' purposes that completely alter the ecology of the area, creating marshlands, swamps in some cases. Termites build termite mounds. Bees build beehives, wasps build wasp nests, birds build nests, bowerbirds, so forth and so on. Termites produce vast amounts of methane, a far more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. And the biomass, the total volume of termites on planet Earth, exceeds that of human beings. And I don't see Al Gore going around there with a magnifying glass and tweezers and saying, you got to buy a methane credit. Come on, buy that methane credit. We're going to tax you for that methane. We've got a big old volcano down here off to the southeast that's putting out more of these so-called greenhouse gases every day than every automobile in the United States for a month. We don't see Al Gore up there with a big old cork and a hammer going, you cut that out right now. It's all politics and extracting money. I love nature, and I believe in the wise use of resources, and I decry an entire economy that is based on digging a bunch of stuff out of the earth, shaping it into the current fashion craze, only to see it tossed back into the landfill 6 months from now. If you really were that concerned about the environment, you would reform our economic system, which by its very nature is predatory. Because the instant that first Federal Reserve note goes into circulation, more money is owed to the private bankers than is in existence. This inevitably creates a situation where you must go out and exploit more resources to create more capital to pay back the interest on the old capital. Or you declare war and you just steal somebody else's resources. So maybe the solution to taking care of the planet for all those people who seem to think this is their highest religion, and I don't really have a problem with that as long as you're being smart about it. But we've got way, way too many people running around saying, I'm in favor of saving planet Earth, and all they're doing is they're parroting whatever the latest slogan or jingoism or the latest T-shirt, you know, so they can feel good about themselves that they're doing something for the planet, as they go on plugging MP3s into their ears and throwing the batteries in the trash cans. And part of the reality is the infrastructure for wise use of resources just isn't there because nobody can make it profitable. I've had a lot of people call on the show who say, you know, our apartment complex has these bins set up for recycling where there's bottles and there's paper and shiny paper. And then when the trash man comes, he just dumps all of these bins together back into the back of the trash truck. You know, because these programs, they can't pencil out. Personally, I think somebody, and again, this is one of those things we could have done if we weren't spending trillions of dollars on Wall Street and trillions of dollars on killing brown people around the world. This would be a perfect application for robotics and artificial intelligence. Big, huge conveyor belt in front of the landfill. All the trash trucks dump their trash on there, and it goes down the belt, and these little robots look down, and one of them's programmed to pick out glass, and one of them's programmed to pick out iron, and one of them's programmed to pick out shiny paper, and another one's and so forth and so on. They're all programmed with artificial intelligence and vision systems and more exotic sensors to recognize items of particular value and sort them out. that is such an obvious and wonderful application for robotics. The technology is there. There's no new technology needed to be developed. It just takes the political will to do it and somebody willing to sign the check. But we're too busy buying white phosphorus for Israel to drop all over Jesus' distant kinfolk to bother with actually doing something that could make a difference to the world. Instead, we're going to create a product out of thin air, the carbon credit, and we're going to force people to buy and sell it and broker it so that the brokerages can make tons of money out of absolutely nothing. It is a fictional product. It is not real. It's a piece of paper. We're going to create this license to pollute, then we're going to sell you this license to pollute. So they can go on polluting, they're just going to pay the license fee. Where's that license fee coming from? The cost of the products. It's just another money-making scam. So, getting back away from there, okay, and getting back to this idea of this push for the global government founded on global warming, the second one, of course, is the global financial meltdown. And over the last 2 weeks, we're starting to see this idea that we have to have a global financial authority. That appears to have actually taken place now in the G20 conference, where apparently the member nations are now agreeing to cede control over their own internal economy to the G20, where now every 3 months all the member nations submit their financial reports, and the G20 collectively, this includes countries like Argentina that completely defaulted on their debt not too long ago, telling other nations like the United States how to run their internal economy. Not that we've got a good economy right now, and our government put it in that position. But the G20 is looking at, they're starting with voluntary compliance with this globalist financial control. And if that doesn't work, they're talking about the other member nations of the G20 imposing sanctions on countries that don't go along with the consensus view. And, of course, I'm opposed to this very, very, very simple reason. Globalism is what created this mess we're in now. And more globalism is not going to fix it. And then the final tripod foundation for this push for global government appears to be this swine flu. I mean, the numbers are not there to justify declaring a pandemic. The World Health Organization literally revised downward the threshold to get it down to where the swine flu would qualify. It's like the government changing the definition of a weapon of mass destruction, where you and I think it's an atomic bomb or it's poison gas or it's biological weapons, and they've revised it downward to include things like overly large firecrackers so that they can go out and say, we've arrested this person for possessing a weapon of mass destruction. Everybody goes, oh, my goodness, he must have had an atomic bomb. And it turns out he had some party poppers. And the World Health Organization revised downward the threshold at which they could declare a disease to be a pandemic, so now they can go to the news and say, we're declaring a pandemic for swine flu. And the numbers aren't there. 1,000 dead, 100 of them children, it's a tragedy, I will grant you. But normal flu deaths in the United States every year number 63, 64,000, according to the sources that I've found. And it's just not there. So they're using this to scare you into going along with, first of all, giving billions of your tax dollars to the vaccine manufacturers, going along with this idea that we need a World Health Organization to tell us how to run our lives here. We're going to go to the phones. Dennis, aloha. Dennis in Michigan. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Good morning, Mr. Rivero. Good morning. I'm very happy to get in before our friend Solomon. I don't want to follow him.
He'll be here any second.
I just was listening to you while I was waiting. Doesn't the CDC give a figure like 36 or 37,000 regular flu deaths, which is still, a lot?
Yes.
And I was curious, if you had a link to the info on your figure. That's
I just put it up at the front page of whatreallyhappened.com. Dennis, okay, hang on the phone. Hang on the phone. We've got to take a break. Got to do a couple of commercials. We'll be right back. Don't go away, Dennis. We're going to take your phone call after these words from our sponsors.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
When all this twisted steel was swept away,
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here, and we have got a lot of callers on the line. We're going to go right back to Dennis. Aloha, Dennis. You had a question.
Aloha. I love your show in regards to just having a reasonable discussion about Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And I know people who've gone and sat there in the middle of areas there that were with the Palestinians, there were Americans, and they kept the places from being bombed.
Yes.
I kind of learned a little bit more about what was really happening. And a lady was telling me the other day, she was a history teacher, that Jordan was set up for the Palestinians. I'm ignorant on that. I would love to hear your input on that. Jordan.
Okay, well, let me put it to you this way. You know, you live in Michigan. Have you lived there most of your life?
All my life.
All your life. Okay, what
for,
if somebody...
years.
Okay, what if somebody came in and said that North Dakota was set aside for you to live in for the rest of your life? How would you feel about that?
Yeah, no,
okay, well, I mean, that's
that
the
situation. All the time, too.
Yeah, that's the situation here. The Palestinians live on Palestine. They've been there for thousands of years. We've got these descendants from this Central Asian tribe called the Khazars who've been caught up in this religious fervor over some 2,000-year-old myths, fables, and metaphors. And they're using this justification to basically steal land. And history's greatest crimes always seem to be accompanied by the shrill scream of, God wills it, God wills it, God wills it. I mean,
right.
You know, just to put it on the other direction, you know, everyone talks about, you know, Hitler wanting to kill all the Jews. Actually, his original plan that he floated with the Zionist leaders was to give them Madagascar, because at that point he thought he was going to conquer all of Africa anyway. Madagascar's actually a very nice place. It's got a lot more room than present-day Israel, and hardly anybody around there except lemurs that are going to object to you moving into it. But, you know, the Zionists said, no, we've got to have Palestine, because that's what the Bible says we're supposed to be there, and on and on and on and on. And, you know, this is the most fought-over piece of ground on planet Earth. But as far as saying Jordan is where the Palestinians are supposed to go, no, the Palestinians are supposed to live on Palestine. And Israel's membership at the United Nations states that explicitly, that Palestinians have an unqualified right of return to their homes that from which they were displaced during the creation of Israel. And if Israel wants to build a new nation around them and with them together to build a new community, you know, that's all well and good. And if the Palestinians don't want to live there anymore, Israel has to pay them for the property. Israel's attitude is, this is a Jewish-only state. The Palestinians have to go. God says, we own this land, and they don't. And we're just going to go on, you know, bombing them until they finally see things our way.
Right. Studying the Ottoman Empire, did that pave the way for the Middle East to be opened up? I mean, at least were they?
I would say probably it was probably more British imperialism, because I mean, you know, the British were in there. The Balfour Declaration is basically what set the stage for the dispossession of the Palestinians. And as most people look back realize, it wasn't really Britain's to give away. But they just sat there and said, yes, we declare that the Jewish-only state will take root here. And this is, again, this is like the United States telling France that they're going to have to make room for, you know, this influx of Polish people. I'm just pulling names out of the air here, but that's the bottom line. It, you know, Britain was making declarations about somebody else's home. It wasn't theirs, you know, to do it. I got to let you go. We got a bunch of callers on the line, and I don't want to have them sitting on hold through the news break. So, Dennis, thank you very much for the phone call. We're going to switch over to Mark in Texas. Aloha, Mark. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Mike, I want to do talk about an article that was published last week. What I wanted to talk about first was, you know, the key word that seems to be always talked about in the political field now is national security. Everything is can't release this, can't release that because of national security.
Yep.
And then we get this article posted on this fellow named Nozette that believed he was working for the Mossad.
Mm-hmm.
Strange to begin with. But what's really strange about that, Mike, is Well, did anyone else hear about it but us?
Oh, yeah, it got hardly any coverage at all on the corporate media. But what's really interesting is a comment that this guy made when he was talking to this FBI agent playing at being a Mossad agent. And he said, I thought I was already working for you guys. So he thought it wasn't a case of he wanted to be a spy for Israel. He thought he already was. And I think that's what they're trying to put the lid back on, is they nailed another genuine spy for Israel. And they're trying to spin it, well, yeah, he wanted to spy for Israel, but it was just an FBI sting. But if you go back and you look at the company that he was working for as a cover, it's an Israeli-owned company. We have so many of those that are linked to espionage, whether it's Amdocs or Converse Infosys. They changed their name ever since 9/11 and everything. But this guy thought he was already a spy for Israel, and they never followed up on that.
Yeah, Mike, that was Israel Aerospace Industries.
That's right.
What's really interesting, though, is the security clearances this guy had. The
yes.
access he had to all of our secret information on nuclear weapons, weapon designs, national defense, and everything else. And
keys to the kingdom.
Yes, he had everything. And there's proof that he passed this information on through this Israel Aerospace Industries because... Of course, in that article, it talked about some thumb drives that he left with that never came back with him.
Yes.
And of course, to have that kind of national security compromised and these characters up in Washington want to throw that on us and this guy's not even a story. Mike, it's
unbelievable. It is. National security is just something they use to keep us peones down in the fields pulling the weeds and stuff. But, yeah, it's a complete joke. I've worked at animation studios, movie studios, where the USB ports will not connect to a thumb drive because they're so afraid you're going to take film clips and stuff away with you. I mean, as a permanent policy at the Disney studios, you're not allowed to keep copies of your own work, even just for your resume. That's a firing offense. And if you try and plug a thumb drive in any of the computers there in the studios, it'll simply say, this is blocked. And we're not seeing this being done at all these labs. I mean, we had, what's his name, Philip Zack, walking, even after he was fired over that attack on his Egyptian coworker. He's walking in and out of our top biological weapons lab carrying weaponized anthrax. And nobody does anything about it. He's never been investigated. It's just like an open door. If you're an Israeli agent, you're allowed to just come and go as you please. And as I said, the real story behind this guy that they busted in this sting operation is that he thought he was already spying for Israel when this FBI agent contacted him. And that's the part they didn't follow through on that. They said, oh, well, we don't need to worry. We've got him on this arrest, and we're going to say that he wanted to be a spy for Israel, but we're not going to follow up on this obvious inference that he already was.
No, and in that article, it also talks about the fact that there's a country A that no one knows whether what country that was. And then there's Israel. And he said in that article, quote, unquote, if they try to put me in jail, I will go to Israel and tell them everything I know, as if he wasn't already, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, absolutely, absolutely. And, Israel never extradites. They're supposed to have an extradition treaty here with the United States, but it's very, very rare for Israel to actually send somebody here to the United States, especially, for espionage. They're still trying to get Jonathan Pollard, out of jail. Apparently, he's now best buddies with Bernie Madoff. They're hanging out together and doing whatever they're going to do. But they're still trying to get Jonathan Pollard out. In Israel, this guy's a hero. He completely undermined the American nuclear deterrent that our parents' generation paid $5 trillion to buy and build. And that's back when $1 trillion was really a lot of money. And Jonathan Pollard completely undermined it and gave it to Israel. Israel traded that information to the Soviet Union, our worst enemy, in exchange for increased immigration quotas to Israel. Some good friend that is. Pollard did that. The Israelis consider him a hero. I think he should have been shot. All right. We got to let you go here, Mark. And Dan, I'm sorry. We're going to have to hold you through the news break into hour number two. So, please hang on to the phone. Drink some coffee. Walk around. We'll be back in about 7 minutes. Stay tuned. Aloha, America.
to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to hour number two of our program here. And we've got some callers on the line. Before we get to them, I want to respond to one of the stories on the news. We've been hearing about this mishap where this passenger jet sort of wandered away from its destination by 150 miles while the flight crew was apparently engaged in some kind of discussion of an intensity enough where they were not listening to the ground controllers. And everybody's trying to say, oh, it was no big deal. But isn't it amazing? I mean, when you go to the airport, you're getting fondled and groped and proctologically examined and x-rayed with new machines, and they go through your purse and your cell phone and everything, and yet this entire plane full of people can just sort of go wandering about, and it, like the stewardess has to knock on the door and say, guys, are you like pointed in the right direction? And it sort of goes back to what this previous caller was saying about how national security, it's all to keep we the people in line, but for everybody else, it's just no big deal. It's just cosmetic. It really is. All right, we're going to go to the phones. Dan in Tennessee. Aloha, Dan. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Oh, hey, Mike. How you doing? Listen, I guess you're off the subject of global warming, huh?
Well, at the moment, but, if you've got something quick you want to add to it, go ahead.
I wanted to recommend a movie for everybody about the global warming scam, and I might be dating myself here, but it's called The Music Man. You ever heard of that movie?
Yes.
And if you just put Al Gore in the position of the Robert Preston character, about
yes.
Pool, you know, that's the problem.
Harold Hill, yes.
And he's
that's
got
wonderful.
A solution for it. You know, that's
yes.
a great film, and I know a lot of your younger listeners may have never heard of it, but they should really check that out.
Yeah, they really should. If you're a Ron Howard fan, I think that was his first movie role was
right.
In
yeah.
The Music Man.
But it's the same principle, you know, the con. It's the same con that that Al Gore is trying to present to us. And, you know, his daughter, Kristen Gore, works on that show, Futurama. And if you want to see some propaganda, just go check that show out.
Yeah, yeah, I've noticed it. Well, right now, I mean, you know, the government is just, they're going to extraordinary lengths to try and get the government's message inserted into every TV show, not just the news programs. They're not just controlling the news anymore. You know, they've got people planted with all of the key shows, and they say, listen, can we add something to the script about how good the swine flu vaccine is? Can we add something to the script about how wonderful global government would be? And it really, it has become propaganda TV, which I think is why they're starting to lose audience.
Right.
And, I'm hoping that Jesse Ventura's show is going to take off and be wildly popular because, money talks. And if it is a hugely successful show, we may see the rest of TV saying, well, we can either do what the government tells us and go broke, or we can give the people what the people want and we might get our audience back. And that would be
right.
kind of a good thing to have happen.
Well, one more thing, you know, on the subject of Israel, I just stumbled across this guy, Jackie Mason. You ever heard of him?
No, I have not.
Jackie Mason, he's a Jewish comedian.
Oh, know. Jackie Mason. I know Jackie Mason. Used to be a rabbi, now he's a comedian. He's very
You've
funny.
You've got to check this guy. He's got a video blog. I think he's got like 200 blogs where, I mean, if you want to see the most disgusting display of hatred in your life.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
check
yeah.
out this guy, and I watched one of them, and I couldn't watch it anymore. He was talking about the human shields, these, he says, the Palestinians, they use their children and, you know, they shoot at us and, you know, what do they expect? We have to shoot back, but they use their children. And, you know, that whole thing about the human shield, the Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, even the Army, U.S. Army College, they debunked that completely. They're not using human shields.
No, we've got the photos. It's the Israelis who do it. The Israelis grab Palestinians. They use wire ties to just strap them to the front of their Jeeps. And, you know, I was very disappointed
it's
because...
disgusting. I mean, this guy is disgusting. This old, disgusting man giving his reason why he has to kill Palestinian children just made me sick. And the comments, if you look at the comments on any pro-Israeli sites, the hatred. What are they going to do now with hate laws? I mean, I've never seen such hatred in my life.
They'll never be applied to the Jewish people. I mean, it's absolutely, you know, I mean, the hate laws that have just been passed through are there for Israel's agents to use against those of us who are criticizing their war crimes. That's why this got ramrodded through. Israel is losing its Teflon coating, and they're desperate to get it back. They're going to use the hate laws to silence those who doubt the official story of the Holocaust. They're going to use the hate laws to silence anybody who's screaming about Israel's war crimes. I mean, we've already got Olmert is out there saying that the Goldstone Report should be thrown out of the UN because it's creating an anti-Israel majority that will prevent the UN from ever being fair and even-handed again. I mean, just completely off-the-wall stuff. But the hate laws will never be applied to Israel and to the Jewish people. It is there for them to use against the rest of the world. And that's exactly what we're going to see. And I kind of wish Ted Pike hadn't made it all about, you know, the gays and the pedophiles.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the issue really was it's another excuse to suppress freedom of speech and freedom of opinion. And, you know, everybody says Israel's the only democracy, you know, in the Middle East. Actually, if you look at the way Israel runs itself, it's not a democracy. Look at how they treat the Palestinians. If we allow that kind of attitude to successfully take over our government, and it's on its way,
right,
we're going to be treated the same way in the United States. There'll be walls that will protect the wealth and the money and the elect, and the rest of us will be living in the mud with white phosphorus raining down on us because we don't go along.
See, I'm not a Christian, so I have actually I lived in San Francisco, I lived in Los Angeles. And I have friends who are gay, and I have no problem with gays or homosexuals or anything. It's just a shame how they're being used by the ADL. I mean, because they are. I mean, they're being used by the ADL, and there's going to be repercussions by people who are...
It's
making a worse situation for them, and I do. I really... Some of my best friends are gay. They're great people. They're very smart and creative. And but I just hate the way that they're being used. It's just disgusting. And you're right about Ted Pike making this whole thing homosexuals and pedophiles and stuff. It's just a bad thing.
He did more damage than good. Maybe that was his intention here. But it's a classic bait and switch. It's like when we had Senator Exxon coming out and saying, we must control the Internet because of all the child porn out there. And everybody says, oh, yeah, I guess we got to control the porn. And then, you know, they're censoring political speech. Health organizations were getting banned, things like this. Then we have this situation about, well, we've got to have these extraordinary police powers to deal with the terrorism. And so, okay, yeah, we got to deal with the terrorists. And then we find these Patriot Act laws being applied to really silly things. But it's that creeping encroachment. It's bait and switch. You sell an agenda on something that everybody can agree with, and then you shift its effects onto the real intended target. And that's what's going on here. Dan, we're going to let you go here, if you don't mind, and I'm going to switch over to Glenn in Pennsylvania. Aloha, Glenn. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hello, Michael. Just wanted to make this point. I find myself thinking a lot when I listen to you. Mm-hmm. In the 20th century,
yes,
tens of millions more people were killed by communist professing atheism than by religious people. So I'm going to say, you know.
Wait a minute. This is a false argument. They weren't killed for being religious. Okay.
No, I didn't say they were. No. I don't care why they were killed. My point is the people doing the killings profess atheism. My point is that violence can be done by people of any ideology, whether it's religious or atheistic. Mm-hmm. And the notion that atheism is inherently peaceful is people are, it's people who are either violent or peaceful. And they
will provide you're missing, a rationale. I agree with you, but you're missing a point. Communism basically espoused atheism because they wanted to substitute the state for God. They wanted a religion, but the religion was centered on the state. It was fanatical. They used the same methodology of incantation.
But they denied God, and then they went out and killed a bunch of people for their cause. Okay.
Well, they went out and they killed a bunch of people, but it had nothing to do with what those people believed in. It had to do with expansionism.
It
had to do with political, you know, with political opposition.
But the people
the purges.
Doing the killing were atheists. It doesn't matter what their victims believe.
Okay, I'm not sure what point you're trying to make here. I mean, if you go back and you look at the history of the Inquisitions and the Holy Crusades, I mean, far more people have gone into battle screaming God's will than this one experiment with communism where the state was the worshipped God. Thank you for the call. We're going to let you go here. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And just a couple of comments here about this issue about religious violence. If you look back through history, it seems like religion and violence goes together hand in hand. I mean, by and large, Christians, Muslims, and Jews, just ordinary people, tend to get along pretty well, and they always have. And because they share a common root in Abraham. And it's just these fanatical leaders will get up there, and they'll use whatever they can to whip up the people and send them out to kill the other people and take their wealth and bring it back to the rulers in the name of whatever god they happen to be worshiping. But we know that religion and violence goes together. Look at Saint Cyril. He was sainted for leading the mob that flayed Hypatia, the last librarian of the great Library of Alexandria, before it was burned. And you know what's really kind of ironic about the Library of Alexandria? Because in it, it is now known, because of copies of documents that survived in the Arab world, that a lot of the treatises of Imhotep in Egypt, who was a great doctor. I mean, yes, they used his name for the mummy, and they made a villain out of him. But the real Imhotep was an architect and a doctor and just an amazing guy. And he had encountered the great plagues in Egypt and found cures. And so if St. Cyril and his band had not torched the library and killed the librarian, Europe might not have suffered under the great plagues that they did. All these kind of things. During the little ice age in Europe, millions of people starved to death because the grains they'd been living on couldn't survive the cold. Meanwhile, in the ground, protected from the cold weather, were all these potatoes. And the clergy said, you can't eat those. If they're in the ground, they belong to the devil. If you eat those, you'll lose your soul. And millions of people starved to death because the priests were telling them, oh, you can't have a potato. You don't think God could have, like, tapped one of them on the shoulder and said, look, they're not going to lose their soul eating a potato. Try them with a little bit of butter and chives, you know, bacon bits. They're really good. They're full of GABA, which your brain needs. All kinds of stuff like this. I mean, my own family is a victim. The Riveros are a victim of the Spanish Inquisition. My family was originally Sephardic Jewish, on that line. I'm a blended now. I've got all kinds of family history all over the place. But on the Rivera line, we were Sephardic, living in Spain. And in the 1490s, we were nobility, we were rich. In the 1490s, when Isabel got permission from the Vatican to cleanse Spain, the Jews were grabbed by the Spanish Inquisition and given a choice. You can either convert or you can leave Spain. And usually there were red-hot pokers and all sorts of other things involved in that discussion. Because my family had lands and titles, they converted. And then once they were let out of the prisons, they very quietly moved over to Portugal, where we stayed happily until 1736 when we got caught in the backlash of the attempted assassination of the Portuguese king. But that's another story entirely. The bottom line is violence and the church have gone hand in hand in hand. Look at how many philosophers have been burned alive by Christians. How many philosophers have returned the favor and burned Christians at the stake? It doesn't happen. Okay? It doesn't happen. The Christians were burning their own. Giordano Bruno was burned for suggesting that the stars in the night sky were just like the sun, only further away. And he was a monk. They burned their own for you know, they tortured Galileo. They don't really have an argument. It's this book, believe it, or we will mess you up. And I'm sorry. And I don't like secular murder either. But look at the Middle East. You've got all these people, the popes, the Jews, the Muslims, the Christians, all coming and screaming, it's our land because God said so. And look at how much blood-soaked history there is there. I mean, this world would be so much better off if we didn't have this crowd of guys, these child molesters in funny robes screaming, go kill them, go kill them, go kill them. Yes, there might still be wars and murder, but we would certainly be without a tremendous number of them that have been caused or at least justified on religious grounds. Look at George Bush was talking about a new crusade going into Iraq, was going around saying, God told me to invade Iraq. If we had an American people that wasn't prepared to say, oh, yes, if God said so, it must be good, George Bush never would have gotten his war going. Hitler was using religious imagery to sell his wars. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on. So this, you know, history is definitely on my side in this debate. All right, we're going to, let's see. Oh, somebody was just saying in the email, St. Dominic. How did St. Dominic become St. Dominic? Killing off all the Albigensians. Remember Pope Innocent III? Kill them all, let God sort them out? It just, it is. I'm sorry. Yes, there have been murders and deaths that are not associated with religion. In the vast scope of history, they tend to be the minority. All right, we're going to go to the phones. We've got Tom in New York. Aloha, Tom. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mike. Thanks. I just wanted to chime in and say, you know, about the hate crimes bill. You know, I'm gay, and there are a lot of us who don't buy this whole thing. And we do feel like we're being manipulated. And, you know, we're fine with civil unions as opposed to marriage and what have you. Mm-hmm. So we're tired of this, and I'd really like to get down to what happened on 9/11. I think that's a lot more serious, frankly.
Okay, fine. But before you do that, you know, I'm absolutely in agreement with you on this situation. I think the gay community has a lot of very serious, legitimate issues that we should be looking at. But in this case, I think Ted Pike was shamelessly shifted the focus away from what the hate bill was really about. And I think the issues got exploited by people who wanted to push an agenda that's really not related to the welfare or lack thereof of the gay community. And I think that's what happened with the hate bill, because, you know, it was sold on this idea of protecting gays from unreasonable hatred, which is a good thing. But it's going to be misused to silence discussion on things that really do need to be talked about.
Yeah, that's my fear with it, too. And I know there's a lot of people who don't understand gay people, especially in the Patriot community. And I would really like to be able to.
I would disagree with that. I'm going to tell you right now that there are a lot more gay people who are sensitive to what's going on in the Patriot community. And I know I was hanging out with a couple of them just last night. And, you know, they're very cautious. They're a little timid to basically make themselves publicly known. But that's beginning to change because of people like you who've got the courage to stand up and say, you know, I'm gay. And yes, I think there's some issues about 9/11. So good for you. You get a cookie.
Thanks, Mike. Enjoy your
show. Please continue. Please continue. You wanted to talk about 9/11.
Well, I'm really concerned about it, and a lot of times it's hard when you hear people like Ted Pike out there. You know, I'm involved in 9/11. I've worked a lot on it in the research, and I've been involved with, you know, even providing some of the evidence that Stephen Jones has worked on and things like that. But a lot of times, you know, when you do that, you're hesitant to kind of be yourself, or, you know, not that being gay is all that big a part of, you know, my life, or, you know, it's more of an adjective than a, you know, who I feel like I am.
Yeah, but you should have the ability to just sort of relax and be yourself and not worry about somebody saying, oh, you're acting weird and all that other stuff like that. I think so much of that stuff is manufactured. And again, it gets back to this idea of a government that wants to keep us fighting amongst ourselves so that we don't unite against the government. Tom, can you stay with us through the commercial break?
Sure.
All right, fantastic. Hang on to the phone because I want to give you a little more time on the other side of the commercial break. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. Before we get back to the phone lines here, and I know Tom is waiting, we've got two Toms waiting actually here, one in New York and one in Sweden. Got an email there over the break regarding the atheist communists mentioned from the previous caller. As far as I've understood it, the Russian Revolution was led by Jews. Thus, it is they who seem to have enjoyed killing the majority Russians. And as I understand it, yeah, that's correct, that the founders of the whole Russian Revolution were predominantly Jewish. And whatever they may have professed, you know, regarding their religion or absence of some, or as I said before, my understanding is they wanted to make worship of the state the new religion. But they were Jewish, and that may have been a big factor in some of these pogroms, rather these purges that were under that were undertaken, certainly in the Stalinist ages. All right, getting back to Tom in New York, and as I mentioned before into the break, I think a lot of the imagined discomfort between homosexual people and heterosexual people comes from this deliberate process of attempting to keep our society fragmented and at odds with each other in order to make us more easily controlled. Young against the old, rich against the poor, men against women. I remember back in the 1990s, the very obvious attempt by the government through, Gloria Steinem was actually been on the CIA payroll early in her career, probably for her entire lifetime. We're putting out there this all men are rapists and that's all they are, to get men and women fighting with each other at a time when it was already becoming obvious that our country was being steered toward a century of new war. You know, the project for the new American century was just starting to take root. And the same thing, blacks against the white. We've seen a major attempt over the last several months to try and reignite racial tension in this country. That doesn't seem to be working. Fortunately, I think Ted Pike and his hate bill may be more of the same, of attempting to create a split between the gays and the straights. Again, to get us fighting amongst ourselves instead of pulling together and saying our real problem is an economy destroyed by government policy and a bunch of wars started with lies that we cannot win. And the looting of the American people en masse to enrich Wall Street and to pour money all over Israel. And so I think most people are beginning to understand that, and they're starting to stand up and say, you know, I'm an American, and that's really all you need to know about me. And my skin color and my bias and my gender and my religion and the rest of it really doesn't matter. I'm an American, united with other Americans. We are one people, e pluribus unum, and these are the issues that we've got to deal with. And so I've talked enough, and you wanted to finish, I think, about 9/11.
Well, I'll just say, you know, I was in New York and living in the East Village when 9/11 happened. I heard the first plane come over and smash into that building, and
ooh,
I watched
wow,
what happened. And then
wow.
I went down there to try to help out, and with a friend of mine, and we saw the World Trade Center 7 come down, and we were a number of blocks north of there, not really that far. We heard it, and we knew for at least maybe 20 minutes, a half hour, it was coming down because everybody was saying they're going to bring it down. And I remember a guy saying that in front of me and turning around and saying that to the people behind me. And we were all just standing there staring at it for all that time, just waiting for it. And it came down and we all expected it. And I have a lot of friends who live down there. I know the guy who called the fire department on the morning to report that gas leak. And I know where that gas leak was. And, you know, a lot of these no-planers, I think they're kind of passe now, maybe in the 9/11 truth movement, so I don't even want to dignify them necessarily by bringing them up. But
oh, they were planted. They were planted to try and make the whole thing look too silly for ordinary Americans to pay any attention to. And
all that stuff.
It's failed. It's failed.
Yeah, all that stuff. When I saw, you know, when I started looking at 9/11, I realized, you know, there are just these things, and you know, I'm an American, and you know, my sexuality is secondary to that, really. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, it's completely irrelevant, and to the idea that, you know, you're a courageous person and you're standing up and you've got first person information, and we've heard this from a lot of people. We see it on the No Day Brothers documentary. Everybody was running around saying, yeah, Building 7 is going to come down. Rudolph Giuliani said we were told ahead of time it was going to come down. Then he backed off and said, no, nobody ever told us that, because the big question all of this opens up is, how did anybody know? How did anybody know? No steel frame building had collapsed from fire at that time in history. How did they know it was going to come down?
Everybody down there knew. Everybody. I have friends down there who they don't follow the 9/11 stuff very closely except through me. And you know, I go down there and have dinner with them all the time. And they laughed when they heard that the government isn't admitting that that World Trade Center Building 7, they live blocks north of it. They fled with their children. You know, on the morning of 9/11, their children were going to school in the World Trade Center area, and they fled with their children while as the second plane came in. And so they, people down there, just everybody knows. They didn't even realize, some of them, that the government is denying it, and they laughed when they found that out. So, you know.
Yeah.
That's
well,
the story
thank you very
New York.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for the phone call. We are going to have to let you go. We've got a long-distance caller, and I've kept him on hold long enough. So, Tom in New York, thank you very much. Call in again, please. And we're going to switch over to Thomas in Sweden. Aloha, Thomas. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Thank you. Aloha and good morning. And I could have listened to Tom in New York forever, especially the business of him helping out on 9/11.
Well, hopefully Tom in New York will call back in, because he's got a lot of good stuff to say that we got to listen to.
Yeah, I have. In my youth, I was with Sydney, actually. Anyway, excuse me. This is about the atheist versus the religious people thing. If I go just to the Soviet Union during the Second World War, this was, they were not fighting for international communism. They call that, in translation, the Great Patriotic War. It was a war of national, trying to maintain their sovereignty.
Yes.
And we don't know if those individual soldiers and sailors and whatever, if they had Marines and whatnot and Air Force, we don't know if they were atheists. That's another thing. And the war effort itself was blessed by the Metropolitan of Russia and the Metropolitan of the Ukraine. That's all I got to say.
Yeah. Yeah, the idea was, you know, that the war, those wars were not fought, at least on Russia's side, on religious grounds. It was irrelevant, you know, what the religion of the soldiers were. It's just every time that you point out the very obvious linkage between religion and violence throughout history, inevitably they say, well, the communists were all atheistic. And they killed people. Therefore, you can't just say that it's only religious people that are leading to war here. But, you know, there's another point on that. Okay, the Russians were defending themselves from an invasion that was launched by a leader who routinely exploited religion to say, you know, that, you know, the Nazi party stands for positive Christianity or whatever it is. It's right there in the Nazi planks for the Nazi party. They had that concordat with the Vatican, with Pope
Pius XII.
That's the one. That's the one. And, you know, where Catholicism was the official religion of Nazi Germany. You had that whole thing with the Ustashi going on. That's beginning to surface again. Before he was Pope Pius XII, his name was Pacelli. He'd been the papal nuncio to Germany. He helped bring down the Weimar Republic, because the Weimar Republic would not declare Catholicism the state religion of Germany, and helped get Hitler into power. Most people don't know this, where Hitler got the swastika. It was an architectural motif at the monastery at Lambach, where Hitler had sung in the choir as a boy.
Sorry.
No, that's where he got it. Now, he reversed the arms, the direction of the arms, to make it uniquely his. But that's where he got it, and it was simply a symbol that said, we, you know, nobody can harm us from outside. That's all the symbol really means. And
it's a protective device, yeah.
Yeah, and it has been used in that context, you know, completely throughout history.
I'm sorry to laugh. Actually, it was the shock. I wasn't laughing at you or laughing at your information. When I experience shock, my first reaction is to laugh.
Oh, that's common enough. It happens to me, too. It's gotten me into a lot of trouble, too. Thomas, we're at a commercial break, and I know this is a long-distance call, and we've got another caller waiting on the line, so I'm going to let you go here. Aloha, Thomas. Thank you very much for calling in. We're going to take a break. As soon as we come back from the break, we're going to grab Richard on the phones for the last segment of today's show. We'll be right back.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the last segment of our show today. This one has gone by real fast, and thanks to everybody who called in, because you make it a much more enjoyable experience for me, and I'm sure for the listeners who get sick of hearing my voice all the time. I want to hit a couple of stories real quick before we go back to the phones here. Seven more banks failed yesterday, pushing the total number of collapsed banks in 2009 to 106. Now, this is the first year since 1992 that more than 100 banks have gone under, and we still have two very rough months ahead of us. Now, admittedly, we're not at depression levels of banking collapse. They were going like 3,000 a year during the worst part of it, but the banks were structured very differently back then. They didn't have a lot of this ability to borrow reserves to try and float themselves along. So, you know, comparisons, it's a little gray there. There's no question. This is a bad situation where we have this many banks failing. And obviously, the numbers are trending up. We've had seven yesterday. That we're getting more and more as time goes on here. Meanwhile, Soros is out there saying that Wall Street profits are a gift from the state, from the government. Okay, these are gifts from the government to Wall Street. And he's agreeing that these monies should not go into bonuses, and that it's fueling public resentment. Yeah, no surprise there. And he seems to feel the resentment is justified, and I would agree with you on that one. One more story real quick. This, at a time of financial crisis in the United States, where we have, you know, we're losing our jobs and our homes, and our farmers are dealing with bad land that was destroyed by flooding from improperly maintained flood control. Okay. President Obama has just signed a presidential memo eliminating a tariff on Israeli imported products that was protecting American dairy farmers and helped raise money for the American economy. So at a time when our farmers are struggling just to get by with American levels of taxation, American levels of environmental interference, problems with the genetically modified crops, problems with the fertilizers and the pesticides, and destroyed farming land from the floods, Obama cancels a tariff on Israeli imported products into the United States. Okay? Folks, it is illegal under U.S. law for American companies to boycott Israel. But as a private consumer, you can be looking on those packages and decide whether or not you want to be buying products imported from Israel for two reasons. One, we got to take care of our own. We got to take care of our American farmers and our American manufacturers. We got to keep what few jobs are still in this country operating right now. And second, any money that goes to Israel helps pay for the weapons used to kill Jesus' distant kinfolk in Palestine. And you don't want that on your soul when you go to the pearly gates. So definitely you want to keep an eye out for this stuff here. Apparently also U.S. trade authorities have ordered the return of $17,000 to an Israeli export agent for a levy paid for butter produced by an Israeli company. So they're refunding money that was already taken from these. It's a complete giveaway. Whose side is Obama on? Isn't he supposed to be the president of the United States? And he's here just doing giveaways to Israel again. Like, you know, all the white phosphorus wasn't enough of a generosity. It's just amazing. And now he's going to stand up in the UN and block the war crimes charges. Don't get me started. I'll get angry. I want to stay calm this Saturday. All right, we're going to go to the phones, and we have Richard in Alabama. Aloha, Richard. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind?
You mentioned the no-plane theory. No.
One of the callers did, yes.
Yeah. Well, there are photographs of the side of the buildings, and you see the outline of the 757. You can see that the engines went in, and you can see that the fuselage went in, and you can see that the wings simply dented the wall and bounced off. And then you look
at the
video.
Which building are you talking about?
The strike on the World Trade Center by the airplane.
Okay. Right. Well, there was two different planes and two different strikes.
Yeah, I know. Okay.
Okay.
Both of them had an exit fireball. You look at the videos, you see an exit fireball almost as big as the entrance fireball.
Now, yeah, all kerosene will do that.
All of the fuel was in the wings. The wings didn't go in further than 2 feet. How do you get an exit fireball as big as the entrance fireball when the wings did not penetrate and they have all the fuel? And the answer is fake video.
No, the answer is that kerosene, like everything else, has got momentum, and when the wings shattered, the kerosene was still traveling forward at a couple of hundred miles an hour and flooded into the building, and you're forgetting the center wing tank, which is in the wing box inside the fuselage, is one of the largest fuel tanks of all on that aircraft. There's a center wing tank that, you know, is full of fuel as well, that followed the fuselage in through there. So
it
thank you for
the
call very
drained.
Much. No, it isn't. Actually, they don't, because it's the last one drained in order to minimize strain on the wing box. You really don't know what you're talking about here. Thank you very much for the phone call. Jesus. Whatever they're paying you to sound this stupid, it is not enough. Thank you for the phone call. All right, moving on back here. Israel's Air Force chief has just come out. As you know, Russia is continuing to reaffirm their support of Iran's military right to defend itself. And they are selling Iran the S-300 air defense missile system. And it's a very capable system. And Israel has got their knickers in a twist. And so the IAF is saying, we must stop the delivery of the S-300s. Missile defense system from reaching countries where the Israeli Air Force may need to fly. Okay, well, the whole point of having any kind of an air defense system is that Israel does not have a right to fly into other people's countries without permission. That's called an act of war. And the reason Iran is buying this missile is because Israel has a long history of invading other people's countries without permission and blowing stuff up. They did it to Iraq's power station at Osirik. They're talking on a weekly basis about flying into Iran and blowing things up there. Of course the Iranians want to defend themselves. You always hear Israel screaming about its right to protect itself against the people whose land they're stealing. Doesn't Iran have an equivalent right to defend themselves? Or is Israel's policy that the entire world must be staked out naked and helpless before their military might? Because it's a lot easier to go in and bomb and kill people when they're not able to fight back, like Gaza. This statement by the IAF betrays an attitude problem that lies at the heart of the reason Israel is so despised around the world. Israel wants one set of standards for itself, and everybody else has got to follow a second standard. Israel is allowed to have nuclear weapons, but they don't have to admit to them or allow inspections, because otherwise that would cut off the funding coming from the United States. Israel is allowed to have all these weapons and systems and defense and all the rest of it, but it's a bad thing if anybody else is allowed to have them, when it is Israel that is the belligerent nation. Iran hasn't invaded anybody in 200 years. The missile is a defensive system to be used when Iran is being invaded from outside, and yet Israel's got a problem with this. You know, obviously Israel's the problem, because Israel wants unfettered access to invade and attack its neighbors at will. That is the problem with Middle East peace. And I got to tell you, you know, we're still seeing the situation where now they're trying to go right to Ban Ki-moon, and they're trying to say, you've got to get the Goldstone Report shut down. It is creating a majority opposed to Israel in the United Nations. Actually, no, the report isn't doing that. Bombing UN schools did it, openly defying the United Nations resolutions time after time after time after time, including the most recent one requesting Israel to sign the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty and submit to the same inspections that Iran does. That's what's created an anti-Israel majority in the United Nations. There is no law that says anybody has to like you, especially if you're behaving like a jerk. Israel's running around screaming anti-Semitism, anti-Semitism, anti-Semitism. No, we do not hate Israel for being Jewish. We hate them for being war criminals and acting like we're at fault if we don't like war crimes. That's the problem. The anti-Israel majority that is forming in the United Nations General Assembly, actually the Security Council too, if it wasn't for the U.S. vetoing all the time. It's because of Israel's actions. It's not who they are that's the problem. It's what they do. And I think the UN is finally saying that their own credibility is on the line unless they put a halt to it. All right, that's it for our show today. We're going to be back Monday, 5 p.m. Central Time here on the Genesis Communication Network. Until then, have a good weekend. It's gorgeous weather here. I hope it's the same where you are. Stay safe. Stay well. Drive carefully. Hug your loved ones. Spend a lot of time with your loved ones. You never know when you're not going to be able to do that anymore. And aloha, America.